Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joining us right now from MLB Network, a guy who almost got in the Hall of Fame a couple of years ago, and he's got a damn compelling case for it. Longtime broadcaster, and MLB Network is airing a new interview across its studio shows featuring former teammate Ron Guidry discussing the 40th anniversary of the passing of Thurman Munson, which unfortunately happened 40 years ago today. The interview can be also seen across MLB Network social channels. We're talking about the great Jim Cott. Jim, John Jastrzemski, Evan Roberts, how you been?
Fine, thanks, guys.
Thank you so much for coming on. This is it's sad every time we get to this time of year because it's almost unimaginable to think back to the tragedy that this town and the Munson family faced and the Yankee family and the baseball family faced 40 years ago. You were on that team. What was that day like? I know it's a sad one, but what was finding out about the passing of Thurman Munson like that day, Jim?
Well, what was particularly a numbing experience and such a shock is that we had just come off a road trip in Chicago, and Tuesday night, Bucky Dent, Goose Gossage, and myself, we had all been with the White Sox in the mid-70s, now we're with the Yankees, and our friends, the Traverso Brothers, who had a Italian restaurant out there in Tinley Park, loved Thurman, and so on Tuesday night, I got Thurman, Greg Nettles, maybe Chicken Stanley was there, Bucky, Goose, myself. We had a big Italian feast out there provided by Mama Traverso, and that's Tuesday. Wednesday, we play the game. We go back to New York. Thurman goes to Canton, and then you turn on the TV Thursday and read about the accident. So we were all just numb about it for quite a while, I'm sure, as the Angels are now. And then you really play the rest of the season in a fog. It's like it really doesn't mean much.
I can imagine, Jim. And obviously that game you guys played, the first one back at Yankee Stadium, one of the more surreal moments you probably ever had in all your years on a baseball field, right?
It really was. I mean, everybody was emotional about it. You know, they had a vacant spot. Pete Sheehy already had Thurman's locker cleared out and, you know, his uniform hanging there. So that was honoring Thurman. But, yeah, that night was tough to get through. And then, of course, the happy side of it, if you could say something's happy in a situation like that, is when we played Monday after the funeral and Bobby Mercer had the great day for his friend Thurman, and we came back and won that game.
Yeah. What was he like? I mean, we hear about his leadership, a true captain, obviously a great player, former MVP, but what was Thurman Munson the guy like?
Well, I was just with him a brief period of time and pitched to him just a few times, but you know, he could be gruff with a lot of people. He was going to, you know, he was pretty unfiltered. He was going to let you know how he felt. But the reason I enjoyed pitching to him the few times I did is he always said, Kenny, we're going to pitch backwards. You know, and when it seems like it's a fastball count, we're throwing breaking balls. And I had to tell Thurman, I said, Thurm, that's really the way you should pitch. So what I enjoyed is I might be facing a lethal right-hand power hitter like, say, a Willie Horton. Might not have been Willie, but and you know he's a great fastball hitter. And then all of a sudden, in a, say, a 2-2 count, whatever the sequence getting to that count was, Thurman would have a big smile on his face. I could see through the mask, and he'd put down fastball. And we'd get him out. And it was just, I think, what made him a great catcher. We didn't have analytics then, thank goodness. We were able to use our intuitive and instinctive skills. And Thurman did that, and he was unpredictable. And that's what was fun to pitch to him, and I think that's what made it a little difficult for the hitters to guess along with him as well.
We have the longtime broadcaster, great major leaguer, Jim Cott, with Evan Roberts and John Jastrzemski here on The Fan. And Jim, I grew up watching you on the MSG Network for years doing Yankee games. So I feel like my childhood, I was learning pitching and I was learning baseball from you. So I thank you for that. And now being around the game, and I'm still grateful you're doing the games on MLB Network with Costas, which is great. You have seen so much change in the game from when you played to doing the Yankees to now doing the national broadcast. Do you like the changes in baseball? Do they make you sick? Are you somewhere in between? Like, how do you feel about these balls just flying out of the ballpark? Guys flicking their wrists and hitting the ball 400 feet, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, I don't like them. I mean, I'm going to do the AAA championship game as I do every year, and I just got the statistical report. They're now using the major league ball and home runs. They may double by the end of the year compared to last year. So, you know, I guess the ball is made differently. We trust Major League Baseball. I mean, made the same. We trust Major League Baseball says that. It's made the same specs, but whether the people down in Costa Rica are a little stronger and they're sewing them tighter, I don't know. But the ball is different, and it is disappointing to see most of the at-bats be home run walks or strikeouts, but that's the game that the modern kids, like my grandkids, that's the only game they know.
Mm.
So they don't know the 1-0 game where you win it with a sacrifice bunt or a stolen base. So even though us old codgers don't like that, we have to adapt to it and promote the ability of the talented young players that we can see today.
I wonder, Jim, if the game will go back and cycle back to, you know, dominant pitching. I mean, you're pitching in the year of the pitcher, 1968. I don't know if we'll ever go back to 1968, but I wonder if the cycles that we see in this sport would eventually cycle back to where it is about pitching, where the home runs aren't flying out of here. And maybe, dare I say, a starting pitcher is allowed to pitch 7 or 8 innings. Because nowadays, Jim, you see it. These guys come out after 5 innings and it's considered a good start.
Yeah, I know Dale Murphy had a recent article on that in The Athletic. You would hope it would, but, you know, unless they soften the ball, regulate the bat a little bit more than they are, make parks bigger, which isn't going to happen. And quite frankly, I think from a marketing standpoint, an indication would be that the Home Run Derby outdrew the All-Star game that Major League Baseball, I think, likes the, you know, we have to say, what is reality? And I think from a financial standpoint, they're saying, hey, this is good, this home run stuff. I mean, people now are able to watch condensed games on their iPad. They don't have to watch the whole game, so they'll watch 8-9 minutes of it and see 6 home runs, and they think that's great. So that might be what we have to live with. I would like to see it go back to where I'm on my way to Minnesota to do a Twins game. They lost a heartbreaker yesterday, and Michael Pineda pitched 7 great innings, and then they took him out. And sometimes that works, but a lot of times it doesn't. And when it doesn't, you say, well, why didn't they allow the starter to go? He was rolling along.
Yeah.
So whether we ever go back to that, I don't know. It's sad that they don't, because the pitchers have the ability to do it. It's the organizations that are stunting their ability to continue and do it.
Yeah, I was watching the Twins the other night. Barrios pitched 7 innings, gave up 2 hits. He was at like 81 pitches, and he's out of the game. And I'm thinking, this guy had perfect game stuff that day. The 2 hits he gave up, one was a swinging bunt, one was a blooper, and he's out of the game in the 8th inning. And, of course, the bullpen gave up runs. I think they held on to 1-7-4, something like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I just heard the tail end of Brian Cashman's comments, and I have such a lot of respect for Cash, and I know how organizations handle pitchers now, but there is no data, not enough data, to show that limiting innings and limiting pitches has prevented injuries.
Yeah.
Because there are more injuries, and what I would wish that organizations would understand, like Jack McKeon, for example, when he managed me in Class C ball as a 19-year-old with a few men on in the 6th inning and then 2 outs, he'd come out, spit a little tobacco juice on my shoe and say, hey, kid, figure out a way to get out of it. And some days we didn't, some days we did, but we learned how to pitch the last 3 innings of a game, and we certainly weren't bigger or stronger or better than the pitchers of today. So it can be done. And unfortunately, they're all drinking the Kool-Aid. This is going to protect our pitchers. In reality, it really doesn't, because the injuries are more prevalent than they were when we pitched.
When you pitched, you had a year in which you threw 300 innings, which is obviously never going to happen
again. Can you imagine?
It's never. I mean, it's never going to happen again. Do you think that in those years, when you're throwing 280 innings, that maybe you were pitching with injuries that they would have figured out in 2018? You know, like you were pitching somewhat hurt. And just getting through it. And nowadays they diagnose everything, and maybe that's why there are more injuries. Is that possible that that was the case?
Yeah, I would say you're right about that. I mean, 65, I pitched with some tightness in my shoulder. We didn't have, nowadays I guess they call it discomfort and take 10 days off. We just say, hey, my shoulder doesn't feel right, and you just learn to pitch with it. Right. And then in 66, it was the elbow, even though I had a really good year that year. But if they did MRIs in those days, yes, they probably would have found things. But the difference is that there was no demand for power. I mean, my first year as a rookie in minor league ball, Class D, my manager at the end of the year said, kid, if you come up with a fastball, you got a chance. Well, can you imagine today if a kid doesn't have a fastball, he doesn't get a chance
right.
in the first place.
Right.
So hey, we learned to pitch with what we had and not put the emphasis on power, but control, movement, and change of speeds.
Jim, obviously locally, a lot of attention with the Yankees not making a trade. No Madison Bumgarner, no Marcus Stroman. Greinke ends up with the Houston Astros. You think the Yankees have enough within this pitching staff to go out and win a championship?
Well, I think because they rely so much on their bullpen, they don't rely on the depth of their starters. And as Brian said, they have, you know, a guy that doesn't get a lot of national publicity in Herman, who has become quite a pitcher. Tanaka, even though he's had an in-and-out year, has done awfully well in postseason with big games. And if they can give you five innings with the bullpen that the Yankees have in a short series, I think they feel like maybe that's enough. We'll see.
It was a couple of years ago, you came within two votes of getting into the Hall of Fame with one of the new committees that they have. Is that something you think about? Like, do you think about, oh, my God, I was two votes away. Hopefully I'll get in on the next try. Or is that something you don't think about at this point of your life?
Well, obviously, you can't deny thinking about it because just like we're talking about now, people bring it up. I have a lot of support from guys like Mike Schmidt and Jim Palmer. And really what it boils down to as a veteran is you have to have the right 12 guys on the committee, 12 of the 16.
Right.
And sometimes, I mean, I put it this way, if Harmon Killebrew were still alive, I probably would be in.
Right. Yeah.
Because if you get a couple of the right guys on that veterans committee, they can swing a little influence. But that being said, I don't worry too much about it. I think when you look at the starting pitchers that are in the Hall of Fame, they were all aces. You know, multiple all-stars, opening day pitchers, guys that led off the series. I had brief spurts of that, but primarily I was a number two guy.
Mm.
You know, I might not run in the Kentucky Derby. I'd run in a real good stakes race for you. But so if you look at most of the starters, they were aces, and I probably didn't fit that profile. But maybe someday I'd get in on longevity and stuff like that. But it doesn't occupy a lot of my time.
Jim, does it bother you that the criteria, because of, you know, starters not going as deep into games, 300 wins now, nobody seems to be able to sniff that number. You look at a guy like CC Sabathia, I think he's going to end up in the Hall of Fame, and he's around the 250 win plateau. As a guy who did it, as a guy who won a ton of games, does that, like, change in criteria for a pitcher maybe 20 or 30 years ago to what it is right now, does that bother you at all?
Oh, that doesn't bother me at all. I think in CC's case, he's a legitimate Hall of Famer because, first of all, they pitch now every 5 days, not every 4 days. We used to start 40 games a year. They probably start 32, 33. And CC was a legitimate ace. You know, he had a 20-game season. He led like the year he had with the Brewers. I say a whole year. It was his partial year leading him to the playoffs. I mean, CC was a legitimate ace. Now he has 3,000 strikeouts, so that doesn't bother me because the 250 wins today, 250 to 260, is probably what 300 would have been back in the 60s and the early 70s.
Yeah, it's a different world. Well, Jim, we always love hearing you on TV. I appreciate you coming on and joining us for a couple minutes. Thank you as always, my
friend. Thanks, Jim.
You're quite welcome, guys. Okay.
The great Jim Cott had a hell of a major league career, pitched for 25 years, was on that 79 Yankee team, sharing thoughts about Thurman Munson.
And a great Yankee broadcaster, yes. I might add.
Oh, yeah.
Great Yankee broadcaster. Well, loved him on MSG.
Look, you said it best. I mean, that's how we grew up with Jim Cott.
I learned baseball. Yeah. I learned pitching listening to Jim Cott.
Absolutely.
All those years.
And he wrote a great book about it, too. I forget the name. But if you Google it, Jim Cott wrote a very good book about pitching. MLB Network is airing a brand new interview across its studio shows. It's going to feature the former teammate of his, Ron Guidry, discussing the 40th anniversary of the passing of the great Thurman Munson. The interview can also be seen across MLB Network's social channels.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.